taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome back to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And I know we've been talking a lot of just a couple subjects lately, but that seems to be where our rights are most under attack. It's this idea of freedom, the idea that can I live my life without being told how to live that life by somebody else, whether that person be in government or just be my neighbor. And in looking at some of the news items, I find more and more that people are just more, it seems either they're interested in being told how to live their life, or those who are willing to live their life on their own dime are not willing to stand up when they see the falsehood that's placed right in front of them. Now, we have been talking a lot about COVID lately, specifically these vaccine mandates. And these mandates are blatantly unconstitutional. Let me explain this one more time. The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution says you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, due process is defined as a process designed to protect the rights of the individual. That's according to the Free Legal Dictionary. So when someone in government says you don't have the liberty to decide for yourself whether or not to take an experimental drug, they are depriving you of your liberty. When they're saying you have to do this to keep other people safe, well, it's up to them to prove it. See, it's not up to me to prove I don't have to. At least it shouldn't be. It seems we've become so entrenched with the idea that we are actually subjects of government, that the idea that government has to prove its point, it is the burden of proof is on government that somebody is dangerous. Now, I hear a lot of people refer to, I believe it was a Johnson opinion involving a smallpox vaccine in the 1800s. And again, details are important. The Johnson incident involved a state law, not a federal one. Mr. Johnson was a passenger on a ship that had an outbreak of smallpox. So we have a question now of due process. In other words, because he was on this ship with an outbreak of smallpox, there was probable cause that he was contagious. And since smallpox has a fairly significant death rate, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, certainly is more than a couple of percentage points, it was probable cause that this person could be a danger to society. So the state of Massachusetts said, either you get the vaccine or you quarantine for a period of time to make sure that you are not a danger to others. Now, when people pull this out, they say, see, we can institute vaccine mandates. They ignore the fact that it's the state doing it, not the federal government. They ignore the fact that they went through due process. Right? There was probable cause not only that he was infected, but that infection was deadly. Therefore, we have what seems to be a similar case turns out to be a drastically different case. So let's take a look at the modern case. Now, let's even set aside the fact that these mandates do not go through a probable cause questionnaire. There's no probable cause that someone is deadly, right? There's no variation that says, okay, this person has been exposed, therefore there's a probable cause that he or she could be dangerous to others. Their assumption is everybody's dangerous. You're assumed to be dangerous until proven innocent. But let's take a look at some of the facts that are coming out. And these reports truly are damning, and they do pretty much support what a lot of us have been saying for the last, year and a half. So the United Kingdom did a year-long study of people who had been vaccinated against COVID-19. And you know what they found? Now, by the way, this is not some fly-by. This is a study published in The Lancet, one of the world's supposedly premier medical journals. And it found that vaccinated or unvaccinated, when infected with a Delta variant, carry similar viral loads at the peak of their infection. The viral load, basically how much virus the person is carrying, is an indicator of how contagious they are. In other words, if you've got more virus in your body, that's more you expel when you cough, sneeze, whatever. So this idea that being vaccinated protects other people is a hoax. It's never been that way. The amount of viral load that you carry in your body, specifically in your nasal passages, whether you're vaccinated or not vaccinated, when you are infected, you are just as dangerous whether you're vaccinated or not. Now, I know a lot of people don't want to believe that because we've all been taught, well, vaccines protect you. Except, you know what I find interesting is the people who are claiming that the vaccine protects you don't act like the vaccine protects you. And here we have proof as to why. The medical journals have shown, they did a study, this study was 621 people in the UK. Regardless of their vaccination status, were just as infected. The study also found that of 205 household contacts of people who had the Delta infection, 38% of household contacts who were unvaccinated tested positive for COVID, while 25% of vaccinated tested positive for COVID. Okay, that's a 13% difference. That's not nothing, but it certainly doesn't show that the vaccine protects you from the Delta variant. And as Dr. Anika Singhanayamagam, I'm sorry, I know I butchered that one, she said, by carrying out repeated and frequent sampling from contacts of COVID-19 cases, we found that vaccinated people can contract and pass on infection within households, including to vaccinated household members. So tell me again, I mean, I've been talking for months about how COVID-19 is not as deadly as we act. Well, now we find that the vaccine doesn't prevent the spread. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't prevent people from having as serious symptoms. There is some evidence of that. But you're telling me I have to take the vaccine to protect myself, but that's not what people are saying. They're saying I need to take the vaccine to protect others. But the science doesn't hold that. The studies don't show that. So besides the simple constitutional and rights issue of a need for you to impose on me something to keep you safe, which is a violation of human freedom, you have the fact that it just doesn't work. So we see once again that this whole vaccine mandate, the whole scaremongering behind it, the intimidation tactics, the bullying, is not a medical decision. These are political decisions. Which makes this next story, so poignant. See, a school district in Rochester, Minnesota, has banned from all district property a man for refusing to wear a mask at a school board meeting. Now, I keep saying, I hear a lot of people say this, but I keep saying, if masks work, why do people who promote mask working not act as if masks actually work? See, if masks work, then wearing a mask would protect you. But we're not told we have to wear a mask to protect us. We're told, no, we have to wear a mask to protect someone else. Wasn't that the same thing with the virus? You're putting a burden on me to protect you? If you want to be safe from the virus, you think masks work, wear a mask, leave me alone. But here you have a person banned from public property. Now we've got a problem. And they're banned from public property not because of some violence they've committed on others, but for their refusal to abide by an illegal mask mandate. Again, Fifth Amendment, 14th Amendment. You cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. What process has this school board gone through to show that him wearing a mask makes any bit of difference? that it proves that he is dangerous and that using a mask would protect anybody. None whatsoever. What you have is you have a bureaucrat who's covering their backside because some other bureaucrat said, well, everybody has to wear masks. You know, we're going through an interesting time right now. My wife is looking for a new neurologist, and just finding somebody that doesn't implement stupid bureaucratic mandates just because some bureaucrat says so is really quite difficult. You know, I live in Middle Tennessee. This is like medical mecca. You go to parts of Franklin, and you can't turn around without looking at a doctor's office, but they're all this bureaucratic fear that says, well, you have to have the vaccine or masks or negative tests or a bunch of other things. Okay, you're telling me I have to wear a mask. What's the mask going to do? It doesn't stop the spread of COVID. We have sufficient studies. Even you want a good control group study when Florida in the summer 2020 went back to in-person schools. They allowed students back in schools. Some school districts required masks. Some did not. And you know what the difference was between COVID infections between the two? Statistically unimportant. Masks do not work. Yet here we have a person barred from property he part owns. It's an unnamed man, so I don't know who it is. But they don't, you know, that's public property. Means it's owned by the public. For not complying with a mandate, which, by the way, is illegal. And in fact, the school board, by trying to enforce that mask mandate, was committing a federal crime. See, Title 18 of the United States Code says you can't deprive someone of a right protected by the Constitution, that it is punishable by a fine and up to a year in jail for using laws, rules, regulations to deprive someone of a right protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States. So here we have an article, and this article, by the way, came from the Daily Caller, about a man who's been banned from school by a school district that was in the process of committing a federal crime. Anyone else find that interesting? Anyone else find that problematic? How about the crackdown in California on In-N-Out burgers? You know, I got an email from someone that's talking about having me go to California, Northern California. I'm hoping to get to go to Northern California. If I do, I'm going to definitely find the nearest In-N-Out burger that's not buckled to tyranny, and I'm going to order myself a double-double animal style. Because we have counties in California that are cracking down and shutting down these In-N-Out burgers because they refuse to be state police agents. In other words, they are not going to be at the door saying, show me your papers, prove to me you're safe. I stand with them. I want to support them. They're In-N-Out burgers in California. I'm in Tennessee. If I go to California, trust me, I want to eat at an In-N-Out burger. And not just because their burgers are pretty good. But as I've said, you know, I'm looking around and I'm looking for businesses that say, we respect your rights, no mask, no vaccine, no problem. That's not quite where In-N-Out Burger's gone. The In-N-Out is posted, says, listen, here are the county rules. They just said they're not going to be the enforcement arm. But you see, that's not good enough. No, they need to be turned into enforcement arms. They need to become the informants for the Stasi. This is what happens when we allow bureaucrats to run amok, and we don't do anything about it. Now, again, I've quoted this before, but Annie Wiesinger, who's the company's chief legal and business officer, said, we refuse to become the vaccine police for any government. It is unreasonable, invasive, and unsafe to force our restaurant associates to segregate customers into those who may be served and those who may not. Absolutely true. If California or these counties want to pass these mandates, illegal though they may be, it is up to them to enforce them. I'm kind of curious, what is In-N-Out Burger going to do? This is an interesting time. And if you live in California and if you love your In-N-Out Burger, What are you going to do? Are you going to support these places? Are you going to make a point of going to In-N-Out Burger? Are you going to encourage them that you'll go even, you know, if they, you know, if they shut down the dining room, you know, will you sit down and eat anyway? You know, walk in, order. And I guess they're shutting down the dining, the in-person dining, so you can walk in and they'll give you a takeout order and you can just sit down and eat and wait for what? The police to arrest you and call the FBI and charge them with violating 18 U.S.C. 242. See, if In-N-Out Burger stands alone, if the people of California do nothing while In-N-Out Burger is targeted for refusing to be the police, then how long before every business becomes an arm of the state, an enforcement arm of the state? How long? What's to stop them? The answer is nothing. But you see, this is what comes from, again, understanding the Constitution and how do you apply it. I use this quote all the time. It's Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper 78. There is no position which depends on clearer principles than that every act of a delegated authority contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised is void. Now, understand this. Every government actor is acting as a delegated authority. Declaration of Independence, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. We delegate authority to governments. When they act outside of that delegated authority, those acts are void. So in the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, Article 6, Clause 2, states that people cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. I don't care what the court says. Those acts that deprive you of your liberty and your property are void. Your liberty, meaning your ability to go about your life without external interference, except the restraints you place on yourself by the natural law, the unwritten laws. The laws are so obvious we don't need to write them down. I like to summarize them and say, we don't hurt people, we don't take their stuff. And restricted only as necessary for the safety and security of society. They have yet to show that these vaccine mandates, these mask mandates are necessary. They claim they're necessary, but that's the act of a tyrant. As William Pitt the Younger said, necessity is the plea of every infringement of human freedoms. It is the argument of tyrants, it is the creed of slaves. The tyrants argue that this is necessary, but you know what they don't provide you? Any proof. Because, what, it doesn't exist? That's what it seems. But I love the way this goes on. He says, Alexander Hamilton goes on, no legislative act, therefore, contrary to the Constitution, can be valid. I would say if it's true of a legislative act, isn't it also true of an executive act and a judicial act, being they are all creations of the Constitution? If we're talking the federal agents, we're talking the U.S. Constitution. If we're talking state agents, we're talking the state Constitution. He goes on to say, to deny this would affirm that the deputy is greater than his principal, that the servant is above his master, that the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves, that men acting by virtue of powers may do not only what their powers do not authorize, but what they forbid. We are living in a perfect example of the insanity that Alexander Hamilton was talking about. Because the representatives of the people are claiming to be superior to the people themselves. They are acting as our masters, not as our servants. Not as our deputies. They are acting as our masters. They are doing not only what their powers do not authorize, but what they forbid. And they will continue to do so until we, the people, stand up and say no. And then on the opposite coast, again, we have a petty tyrant, this time at the city level. New York City Mayor de Blasio. Now, I was actually born in New York City. Lived there as a young child. Moved out when I was 11. I've been to New York City many times for work, for pleasure. I still have family there. Right now, I wouldn't touch New York City with a 10-foot pole. I mean, understand, when I lived in the city, I lived in the city through the 1960s and early 70s, some of the worst times in the city. But when I read Mayor de Blasio saying, no, I am not having second thoughts, referring to the mandates, he said, we expected that a lot of the vaccinations would happen toward the end of the deadline. We also know that a lot of people make the decision once they really realize that they're not going to get paid. That's just human reality. Now, they're basically saying, he says, listen, we're just going to make their life painful and miserable because we know they're going to fold. They're going to buckle. They're going to realize that we're not going to back down. Well, I'm looking at what some of these police department and firefighters and EMTs are doing, and I'm not so sure. I know it's scary to put your job on the line, but you have to ask yourself, is your job worth your life? Is your job worth your freedom, your liberty? Is your job worth your child's future? Sure, we're saying, oh, well, how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to put food on the table? What city is your child going to grow up in? If the mayor can simply come out of thin air, make an illegal order, and put people out of business, tell them, I mean, this is literally the equivalent of an old vaudeville act, right? Where someone's walking down the street, mugger comes up, puts a gun in their back, your money or your life. Well, here's de Blasio saying, your job or your freedom? Which will you pick? Now, according to reports, as of October 27th, 86% of New York City's municipal workers have received at least one dose of the vaccine. Now, the rate among first responders are estimated to be lower, only about 65% of firefighters and 80% of EMS. But we're not simply talking about the workers. See, if we don't have law enforcement, if there aren't firefighters, if there aren't EMTs, when you pick up the phone and dial 911, what's going to happen? We're talking a major city. What happens when someone's breaking into your apartment and you call 911 and they put you on hold? Or they say, okay, but the officers report that we have are reporting to other things. They'll get to you later. When you smell smoke and there's fire and you call 911 and the firefighters are busy doing something else because the city doesn't have enough. You know, I've seen the city pressure down the number of firefighters and police in order to save money. I've never seen a city do this in order to promote a political agenda. Because again, this has nothing to do with health and safety. This has nothing to do with medicine. This is an attempt by the city of New York to institute power and control over city workers. And if they'll do it over city workers, trust me, they'll do it over you. When you're waiting for emergencies, you know, people say, you know, when you know, seconds matter, police are minutes away. What happens when police are hours away? Think about the impact on the millions of Americans living in New York City who now may have to wait for emergency services. Think of the image of the brave men and women who ran into the towers being told, you can't work here unless you submit to our mandate. And again, not for medical reasons. There's no, as I understand it, there's no opt-out for people who are already immune, for natural immunity. This is not a medical decision. And constitutionally, this is abhorrent. It's abhorrent to the rule of law. It's a violation of the Constitution. It's a violation of the laws of the United States, the supreme law of the land. It is repugnant, not just to the Constitution, but to the very concept of liberty. The court in the Marbury versus Madison, the Supreme Court wrote in their opinion, certainly all those who frame written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation, and consequently the theory of every such government must be that an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. Well, if an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void, what about an act of a mayor that's repugnant? That is evil and despotic. But you see, he gets away with it because, well, some of the firefighters and police are standing up, but we're the people of New York City. I know, it's a very little liberal city. You're used to dealing with government. You're used to having government control your life. How far will you let them go? Are you prepared to live as subjects of King de Blasio? Or are you free citizens? How many of you immigrated here to get away from tyrants and despots? Are you going to sit there and become a subject of another one because you're unwilling to stand? The American people are not powerless. The Constitution gives us all the authority we need. It confirms all the authority we need to stand up to these tyrants. But we must do it. The Constitution is not going to jump out of its case and start dope slapping these people. It is our legal authority to look government in the eye and say, no, we did not authorize this. We have the right, we have the duty to replace you with someone who will. And it is our duty to refuse to comply with a void mandate. Sadly, I don't see very many American people do. I pray that that is a trick of the media, but I'm not sure. So we need to ask ourselves, what are we going to do? Because the future that we're being led to is a dystopian one indeed. The question is, will we wake up and turn before it's too late? Now, before I head off to break, I want to remind you to check out healthycell.com. You know, you get to the end of the day, you get a little fuzzy-headed, you need that little boost. Maybe you reach for that energy drink or that energy shot, knowing that, yeah, you'll get a boost, but then you'll crash. Well, Healthy Cell has this thing called Focus and Recall. It helps you boost your short-term memory as well as kind of freshen your mind, get everything working again, all without the caffeine and sugar and all without the crash. As an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the code OUTLOUD at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report. Are you looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator of nutritional supplements for cell health. Most vitamins haven't been upgraded since the 1930s. Healthy Cell uses an innovative technology, which is a gel pack that provides a better absorbed vitamins and nutrients where they're needed the most. I just took a Healthy Cell today before I went out and exercised, and I can tell you I am working hard for America Out Loud Radio as we speak. And tonight, I am looking for good REM sleep. And I can tell you, I am tired and I want to fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deeply and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell. I'm going to use the Healthy Cell REM sleep supplement. This is the only sleep supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep. So go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, and get a 20% off for your first order of any product. I use Healthy Cell, and I'm really glad that I've been introduced to it. So I recommend it for you. Again, go to healthycell.com and use the OutLoud promotional code for a 20% off your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Now, today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're asking the question, can we live with freedom anymore? Are we prepared to stand up and live for freedom? Or the term I prefer to use is liberty. It's a little more refined, a little more defined. And according to Noah Webster in his 1828 dictionary, civil liberty is the liberty of men in a state of society or natural liberty so far only abridged and restrained as is necessary and expedient for the safety and interest of the society, state, or nation. A restraint of natural liberty not necessary or expedient for the public is tyranny or oppression. So why do I bring that up? Well, as we're looking at what we're talking about restraints on our liberty, our ability to live our lives as we see fit without restraint or abridgment except by natural law. That's natural liberty. You know, basically, the laws that are so obvious, we don't need to write them down, or as I like to summarize them, we don't hurt people, we don't take their stuff. Or positive laws, or you know, laws of government that are necessary and expedient for the safety and interests of society. So when I look at a story like this one I found in the Epoch Times, where we have state attorneys general in 10 different states are joining the fight against the Biden administration vaccine mandate. Now, apparently late October, at least on October 29th, attorneys general from Alaska, Arkansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Iowa, Montana, New Hampshire, and North and South Dakota, and Wyoming have joined in this fight. And I've said this before, there is nothing wrong with our state governments petitioning the federal courts for a redress of their grievance, right? Going to the court saying, we want your opinion on this. The problem goes when that is their only redress of grievance. See, in the lawsuit, we have these states claiming, quote, if the federal government attempts to unconstitutionally exert its will and force federal contractors to mandate vaccinations, the workforce and businesses could be decimated, further exacerbating the supply chain and workforce crises. This is what Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt said in a statement on the lawsuit, which to me is interesting because he kind of blows right past what to me is the most important issue. Says, yeah, it's unconstitutional, but look at the bad stuff that happens if this goes through. How about it shouldn't happen because it's illegal? It violates the supreme law of the land. How about as states, as sovereign, independent states, how about you stand up and say, no, federal government, we did not delegate this power to you. We did not authorize it. It is not yours. You are stealing it. Not only will we not comply, but within our state, we will arrest anyone who attempts to deprive our citizens of a right protected by the Constitution, namely the right to be to not be subject to or the deprivation of their life, liberty, or property without due process of law. See, that's the difference between a vassal asking its master to protect it from itself and a sovereign state saying, we created the federal government, we determine your powers, not the other way around. We don't have to prove to you that we can stand up against you. You have to prove to us that we've given you the power to do what you're telling us you're going to do. That's the difference. That's the, to me, the fundamental problem with most of these mandates and most of the litigation against these mandates. They forget that they are free and independent states. They act as vassals begging government for a redress of a grievance. And they blow right past, to me, what is the core issue. The core issue is not the outcome of the mandate, because that is debatable. The question of whether or not it's unconstitutional should be fairly easily determined. But if we're going to blow right past that, then we're basically, again, we're asking the courts to once again not act as arbiters of law and fact, not act as deciders of giving opinions in cases based on law and fact, but based on their opinion of whether or not the outcome is just. Whether or not the restraint that is placed on the people is necessary, or they've proven that it's necessary. That it is it, not just that whether or not it's legally allowed, but well, do they consider it necessary and expedient for the safety of society? And what is the basis for that? This is a way of thinking that is I haven't seen a lot of in this country lately. No, mostly what I see is, oh, well, I don't like the outcome of this, so it must be bad. That's true for the mandates. That's true for all of this, which is where we get another article where you have the Commerce Secretary, when asked about delaying the implementation of the mask mandate, her response was, no, I think that would be a big mistake. People want to work in a place where they feel safe. All right, well, let's stop for a second. Okay, so yeah, people want to work in a place where they feel safe. Which is more important, that people feel safe or that they be safe? It's a very important question, because it gets back to the question of we must do something or we must do something effective. See, these mandates are about we must do something to make people feel safe. Well, with all the data that shows that, A, COVID-19 is not that deadly to most people, B, that the vaccines do not stop people from getting COVID or spreading COVID, aren't we lying to them to say that vaccines will make them safe? And if that's the case, then could these vaccine mandate laws be possibly considered necessary? We've already determined they're unconstitutional. They're depriving you of your liberty without due process of law. They haven't shown that you're a danger. They haven't shown that they're necessary. All they have are, well, bureaucrats with medical degrees claiming that is so in the face of evidence to the contrary. And in fact, many times even contradicting themselves. So I ask you again, if these laws are not constitutional, if they're not necessary for the safety and security of society, well, then by Noah Webster's definition, they're tyranny. And while there are many people who are claiming this, I'm seeing much more argument to the effect rather than the cause. In other words, they're arguing that the effect of vaccine mandates is bad, rather than saying, hey, they're unconstitutional, period, end of story. The 10th Amendment says if this power wasn't specifically delegated to the United States, they don't have it, period. And that should be the end of the discussion. If we want the federal government to be able to issue medical mandates, then the American people through our states must delegate it to the United States. Until we do, that should be the end of the discussion. But it's not. Why? Well, partially because the American people have no clue what the 10th Amendment says and what it actually means. And because we hire people that are more interested in, well, getting reelected and looking good than in actually following their oath to support the Constitution of the United States. And because we don't understand the supreme law of the land, we get all wrapped around the axle about things that are, well, maybe not things. In other words, we're more worried about what we like and less worried about what's the actual law. Let's take a look at this. I found this on American Military News. And of course, you can't trust the headlines, but they do tend to get your attention. The headline says, Biden won't stop firing troops challenging vaccine mandates, defying federal judge. Oh, that just sounds, you know, people are up in arms. Oh my God, how dare he do that? Well, let's back up and look a little bit. First of all, what the judge did was request that President Biden and his administration agree to stop terminating both U.S. servicemen and civil and federal employees during the legal challenge. The Biden administration said it would not halt disciplinary actions and terminations of federal employees while they were awaiting the court's opinion. They call it a ruling in the article, but it's technically the court's opinion on a temporary restraining order against the vaccine mandate. So the judge says, hey, Biden administration, please don't continue until we've, you know, with what you're doing. Biden said, nope, we're going to do this until we see a temporary restraining order. But you see, there's one itsy bitsy little problem. You see, in America, we have a long history with courts ordering the or attempting to order the executive branch around. Again, we go all the way back to Marbury versus Madison in 1801. I believe it was 1801, where the question was, could the court issue an order, a writ of mandamus, to the executive branch? In the person of the Secretary of State, to do something. Specifically, in this case, to process, to sign the commissions for judges who were approved in the previous under the previous administration. Now, writ of mandamus is defined by the Webster Legal Dictionary as an order from a court to an inferior government official ordering the government official to properly fulfill their official duties or correct an abuse of discretion. So we have a problem here. Is the president an inferior entity, an inferior official to the Supreme Court? No, they're not. I'm sorry. I know we've been drilled into our head that the Supreme Court are our supreme rulers, but they're not. And once we begin to recognize that, guess what? Federal courts they can issue an opinion. They can say, you know, President Biden, we think what you're doing is wrong, but they have no power to enforce it. And the president is not legally bound to an opinion of the court. And if we go back again to Marbury versus Madison, we read there, the authority therefore given to the Supreme Court by the act establishing the judicial courts of the United States to issue writs of mandamus to public officers appears not to be warranted by the Constitution, and it becomes necessary to inquire whether a jurisdiction so conferred can be exercised. In other words, they say, listen, we know that the legislation that actually created the courts, in other words, the Supreme Court, the courts are required by the Constitution, but it's actually legislation that puts that into action. That's the necessary and proper clause. And the question is, okay, listen, the authority of the court to issue an order to a public official, a writ of mandamus, is not warranted by the Constitution. How can that power be exercised? So everybody who's getting all wrapped around the axle because President Biden is not simply doing whatever a court tells him. Remember, we have a separation of powers. We have three branches of government. Now, they're not co-equal as we're often taught, but they are separate, and they have to be. See, if the president can't ignore the actions of a court and then be held accountable by the people in the states, well, then the courts rule. We no longer have a republic because laws are no longer made by the people unless they are approved by the courts. We no longer have an executive executing the laws except the ones that are ordered by the courts. And the courts become the supreme rulers. They become the supreme law of the land, not the Constitution itself. Now, that does not mean to say that Biden's mandates are legal. The president does not have the authority to set up rules and regulations for the military. But Paul, he's the commander in chief. He is the chief general. But it is not the president that is authorized to establish rules for the media. Do you know whose job it is? Guess what? Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, it is Congress that has the power to set up rules, to, quote, make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. It's not the president. This executive order is exercising a power not delegated to the president. That executive order is void. By the way, it's the same for the military. It's also void for federal employees. Now, federal employees are a little closer to home. But again, remember, the president is the head of, well, he has all executive power, meaning the power of an executive order extends only to people in the executive branch, which is why everybody who's realized this, that Congress and the courts, they're not covered by the executive order. Those employees, not covered by the executive order, because the president doesn't have the legal authority to do so. So while the president may be able to tell federal employees of a new employment standard, just like anything else, if you're changing an employment agreement, it is up to the employer, whoever's making the change, to allow for exemptions and to allow for a redress of a grievance. If let's say I come to do some work at your house, and we agree that I'm going to do, you know, let's say I'm going to mow the yard, and you're going to pay me $50 to mow your yard, and I'm going to do it once a week. And then you suddenly come through and say, well, Paul, we know we had this agreement that you're going to come and mow your yard, but now the agreement is you can only do it with an electric mower. Now, if we had a contract, I could dispute that. I said that was never agreed to. We have two parties to this. There was no agreement. Therefore, I don't have to use an electric mower. I can continue to use my gas mower. Now, he can also say, well, then I don't want this contract anymore and terminate you. The question then becomes, okay, if you're going to terminate me because I won't comply with a change in the contract, what is the contractual agreement? Which is where the unions get real interesting, because many of these federal agencies are dealing with unionized employees. Now, I'm not talking about whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing or an evil thing. But if you have an employment contract and one party tries to change the contract without agreement from the other side, guess what? That change is void. So there's certainly plenty of issues there. But in the example where we don't have a contract, where you just said, hey, Paul, I'll pay you to come mow my lawn. We don't have an ongoing contract. Says, well, from now on, I only want you to mow my lawn with electric mower. I have to decide whether or not to comply with that. If not, okay, I've lost the contract. But the thing we need to remember is very often we have employment agreements, and those employment agreements cannot be modified in a one-sided manner, not legally. So this part of the mandate, the executive order dealing with service personnel and federal employees, there are a lot of legal issues there. There are a lot of legal issues. Again, the president doesn't have rulemaking authority over the military. That is Congress. And while he can deal with civilian federal employees in the executive branch, he can't set policy. Ultimately, he's dealing with employment agreements. And the federal government is just another employer. They don't get special tools just because, well, they happen to work in Washington, D.C. So what can be done? If we're going to stand for our liberty, what can we do? I mean, understand, the states really should be doing more. And I'm seeing a couple states, but I'm a little concerned in how they're going about doing things. So, for example, Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts signed an executive order barring state agencies from enforcing President Biden's COVID vaccine mandates on state employees. And everyone's, oh, this is wonderful. All right. Now, this is a step. All right. I understand. Mr. Ricketts is a politician. But he's taking a step saying, okay, the Biden mandate, which, by the way, it's been sent to Office of Management Budget. I think if it hasn't come out yet, it's coming out soon. So we haven't even seen the actual language yet. But Nebraska said, listen, we cannot apply this to state employees. It is now, we are barring state agencies from enforcing that mandate on state employees. So all the state is saying, we're not going to apply it, and we're not going to apply it against our state employees. So all of those others, all those private employers in the state of Nebraska that may fall under this mandate, you're not protected by this executive order. It's a limited step. Now, it's a step in the right direction. It's a, as far as it goes, this is a good step, but it should not be an only step. It should be a one step along the way. And I would request the people in Nebraska, if you want your states to help protect you from the bullies in Washington, D.C., that you contact your governor, your representatives, and you push for them to stand up, not just for state employees, not just for themselves, but for every citizen and every business in the state of Nebraska. Now, I've talked earlier about Governor Kay Ivey of Alabama. Now, I've talked earlier, Ms. Ivey signed an executive order barring the vaccine mandates across state agencies. If memory serves, state agencies are not allowed to enforce Biden's executive order. Now, according to a report from the Federalist, lawmakers in Alabama are in special session, and several of them are demanding the governor add vaccine mandate protections to the agenda. I'm not familiar with the process and special sessions in Alabama. I don't know what the Constitution says. I don't know if it's the governor who sets the agenda for a special session. I don't know. My question, simple, is your lawmakers make law. If you believe that you have the constitutional authority to ban the federal vaccine mandates in Alabama, do it. Now, again, it could be a question of this, but let me take a look at this from another point of view. Now, again, Governor Ivey signed an executive order barring mandates across state agencies, barring state agencies from enforcing it. But that order does not apply to private businesses. Okay. The problem, there are two problems here. Problem number one. Use example like Texas and Montana. Both of those order private businesses to not demand vaccines. They are just as unconstitutional as requiring vaccines. The state doesn't have the legal authority to tell a private business what it must and must not allow on its private property. So the examples that some of these legislature using of Texas and Montana, they're breaking the laws just as much. They're just doing it in the opposite direction. So everybody seems to be so fine with it. But then Governor Ivey says that Biden's federal mandate should be challenged by the courts, not state house legislation. No, Ms. Ivey, it is your responsibility not to be dependent on and a vassal of Washington. If you have proof, if you have evidence that this is unconstitutional, it is your duty. You took an oath to support the constitutions of both Alabama and the United States. If it is unconstitutional, it is your duty to oppose it, not to simply sit back and pass the ball to a federal judge who, by the way, works for the federal government that you say is infringing on the rights of the American people. So in many ways, the solution to these problems are just as unconstitutional as the problems they're trying to fix. If the legislators want to say the federal imposition of a mass mandate, I'm sorry, of a vaccine mandate is unconstitutional, therefore it's not allowed in this state, that's fine. If they're going to bar private companies from requiring vaccination as a condition of employment, they've gone too far. They have jumped the shark, so to say. They're doing the same thing, just from the opposite side. They are telling businesses how to run their business. They're telling private entities who can and cannot be allowed on their property. But Governor Ivey is wrong, saying the states only challenge, only thing they can do is to beg the federal government for relief. No, Ms. Ivey. You are a sovereign state. You are part of the group that created the federal government, that you set its boundaries. Only the states have the authority to modify the boundaries of the federal government by amending the Constitution. Stop begging the federal government to protect you from itself. Do your job. Stand up and say no. Now, again, I would only support this if the limitation is no vaccine mandate, no government-issued vaccine mandate can be applied in the state of Alabama. That's fine. This is Alabama saying not only will the state not impose one, we will not allow a federal mandate to be imposed within the territory of Alabama. But if the legislators want to say, no, we will tell businesses you cannot require a mandate, well, then you've gone too far. See, that's what comes from spending time reading and studying the Constitution, from understanding what it actually says and taking the time not simply to make political points, not to simply oppose this because you don't like what someone else is doing, not making law that prevents someone from doing something you don't like, but actually upholding the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, saying you can't deprive someone of control of their property even if you don't like what they do with that property. That includes the property they have in their business. That includes setting standards for people coming into their business. That includes things like who they can and cannot employ and under what conditions. This is why it takes time to immerse yourself and to study. And if you want to find out more, please head to constitutionstudy.com. You can find out more. I'm writing about these topics all the time. You can always ask a question there. You can always join me for my live Q&As, second and fourth Thursday of the month. Find it all there at constitutionstudy.com. Because if we don't learn this for ourselves, we will continue to be bamboozled by politicians who are playing on our emotions rather than following the law. Now, America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeart Radio Network. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa, where we stream 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so you can not only hear them live, you can also hear the podcast on those very same apps. And please spread the word so others can learn about the blessings of liberty.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.